Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Funk Radio. The first episode, I think, of 2018.
That's correct.
Happy New Year to our listeners.
And if you're listening to this 10 years from now, and it's near the New Year time, then Happy New Year. And if it's not, then, whatever.
So for this episode, I basically thought it'd be cool to kind of do like a little recap of some of the news that's happened in the last couple weeks. I don't know if this is going to end up being some recurring thing that we do. It's just something I kind of thought of. The first topic that I wanted to cover that I'm sure definitely got a lot of news was Spotify being hit with a $1.6 billion lawsuit from a major music publisher, Wixen Music, basically insinuating that the company failed to pay songwriter royalties to a publishing company approximately 21% of the time. And this Wixen group happens to represent artists including Tom Petty, Rage Against the Machine, Missy Elliott, Neil Young, Weezer, The Beach Boys, and other artists. Now, I don't know if all of those artists are on that label or if they're just being represented in sort of a class action kind of way, but they're on different labels.
So all these artists and more, whoever else is on this list, are saying they're not getting paid royalties for a certain amount of plays and stuff on
Spotify. I don't know, the percentage of time seems a little odd. I don't know if that's just like a clerical thing or if they're purposely not paying for certain songs. I don't know. The lawsuit does claim, however, that Spotify did not get the necessary mechanical license, quote, to reproduce and or distribute musical compositions on its service. So aside from this $1.6 billion in damages, which the Wixen Publishing says is the summation of $150,000 per composition. So aka per song. Yeah.
Jeez.
Used without proper licensing. So so basically this 20% of the time, 21% of the time is specific songs, I guess, that they, or maybe albums that they didn't pay the proper rights for.
Well, how are they how is this stuff getting up on the Spotify if the proper people aren't
Funny, actually, because something that may end up being delved deeper into in another episode, Spotify kind of got their start similar to Napster by actually basically allowing people to stream pirated music that they had on their servers.
So basically people were uploading music to it without there being any like kind of like royalty rights or anything connected to that. Individuals were uploading it rather than like record labels and whatever.
Not only that, I think the original, whenever Spotify was originally set up and the original library of music people were allowed to stream, it was music that wasn't necessarily legally obtained. It was just on, you know, Spotify servers that they allowed people to have access to stream. And then once they became more, a little bit more legitimized, they're like, okay, we gotta, you know, set up a business model to actually get the rights to a lot of this stuff, so we're kind of on the up and up, so to speak. It's funny though, because this particular lawsuit, this $1.6 billion lawsuit, isn't the first for Spotify. They've actually been slapped with a number of copyright infringements. In May 2017, the company said that it would pay publishers and songwriters $43.4 million over similar complaints from copyright owners in the U.S., which is a small fraction of $1.6 billion that this particular company is alleging. Spotify is currently valued at $19.1 billion. So this $1.6 billion lawsuit would be a pretty big hit.
Yeah, that's pretty sizable.
I don't know your thoughts on this, Peter, but in a weird way, this kind of seems like, you know, the record industry still having problems with Spotify's business model. You know, not compensating them in the old business model way that they would like.
Right.
It seems like there's like a resistance to this idea of streaming music in general. And, you know, obviously record industry has been resistant to streaming music, you know, because they want people to buy albums and pay per song and all this and that. So I don't know if this is just like some sort of technicality where these artists aren't being compensated as much as they, as it's said that they should be based on contracts or what, but it definitely seems like there's still some animosity between Spotify and a lot of these record labels and artists.
Yeah. Well, like you said, there's been, this isn't the first lawsuit that they've gotten for similar stuff as well.
Yeah. It's frustrating though, because it's like, for all intents and purposes, this basically kind of is the future of music consumption, and yet it seems like there's so many big players that are resistant to it.
Well, hell, it's not even the future anymore. It's the present, and it's been around for, like, at least 5 years in the mainstream.
Touché. And it just seems like there's a lot of big players and artists. I mean, remember Taylor Swift was like, I'm taking my stuff off Spotify because they're not paying me enough.
Well, there are a few big artists that were not on it for a long time. I think they are
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating that there's such this resistance when, like, from a consumer standpoint, this is the simplest and easiest way to get people to listen to your music. You know, $10 a month, listen to whatever you want, is a big difference between, you know, $10 an album, if that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The way I see it, it's just this battle between, like, the old school and the new school as far as, you know, how people want to consume music. If you give them this cheaper, more freeing option, you know, of course, they're, as a consumer, they're going to take it, and they're not going to want to go back to the old way of doing things.
Yeah.
I do agree that maybe there should be some more transparency in how artists are paid, but honestly, I think a lot of this kerfuffle is more to do with the record labels basically not getting paid as much as they'd like, than the artists themselves not being compensated properly. If you're paying $150,000 in compensation per song, how much of that goes to the record label and how much of that actually goes to the artist?
Probably, you know, mostly to the label.
Exactly.
Well, I guess I don't know enough about this whole issue to really have a strong opinion of, like, it needs to be this way or that way, because I don't really know all the details. Mm-hmm. From what I can tell, it seems like Spotify and these record labels made an agreement of, hey, based on this many plays, we're going to get this much royalty, and they're not getting paid what they think they should be based on those numbers.
Yeah, so maybe Spotify's cooking the numbers. I don't know.
Maybe. It's hard to say because I don't necessarily want to be on the side of the record labels, but at the same time, if they are in a written agreement with Spotify for certain percentages and they're not getting those percentages consistently,
mm-hmm,
then it makes sense.
Well, I think there's a disproportion between the error that they're saying Spotify made and the damages that they say should be ensued from that error. I guarantee you Spotify didn't pay $150,000 per song to get these royalties. And
right. Well, those are more compensation fees or something, more so than practical numbers.
So to say that, you know, the I don't know, compensation for loss of proper licensing or not getting the proper licensing is that astronomically high seems a little disproportionate. It's not far-fetched. You know, remember in the early 2000s when people were using like LimeWire and all those like sketch-ass pirate pirating sites, and then there'd be these news stories of the RIAA suing like a 13-year-old kid for like $1 billion because he pirated some album. Right. This seems like the evolution of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like they're not getting compensated because this model is hurting them, so they're going to, you know, attack with full force and demand outrageous sums of money in compensation for this.
Well, I'm not saying
Spotify is necessarily in the right.
Right.
I'm just saying I think this Wixen publishing is sort of taking it out of hand.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, this is very much, money-wise, this is very much a legal matter in terms of how much they're asking for. I think that they were asking for literally just pay us the remaining 21% or whatever we're missing. Yeah, I'm sure it would be a fraction of 1.6.
And that's probably what's going to happen. It's going to be settled and out of court, and they're going to, you know, pay that difference maybe with interest. They're not going to pay a sum of money that's literally almost a 6 or 7% of their entire company worth.
Right.
Okay, well, I've been rambling. We'll try to stay up to date with what's going on with this story and update your listeners as things unfold here on Funk News.
So, the next two are a little bit more similar.
And less depressing.
Right. Apparently, I mean, I'll let you lead, I guess, since you did a little bit more writing on this, but apparently cassettes are making a comeback.
Yes.
As of the last year or two. Vinyl, obviously, that's been well known for probably like a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a slow return.
Resurgence.
Yeah, but I think what you and I were saying before we started recording is that the era of artists that are kind of being popular in these mediums is probably one of the more interesting parts of this.
Yeah, yeah. So what Peter's alluding to is that in 2017, for whatever reason, cassette tapes have started to make a comeback because records aren't hipster enough. Nielsen Music, which is a subsidiary of Nielsen, you know, the Nielsen ratings and all that stuff they do for like television.
Yeah.
Their sales numbers have come out, and they said that for 2017, cassette tape sales have risen 35% with 174,000 new cassettes sold, which, you know, isn't really that much, but it's
still
a very large increase.
That's a lot of cassettes.
Yeah. Just think about that. That means there has to be 174,000 cassette players out there somewhere still being used.
Right.
That now, the funny thing about this resurgence in, you know, obviously affinity for cassettes is that it was led mostly by the popularity of the movie Guardians of the Galaxy and its sequel, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, both of which we've reviewed here on Funk Radio.
And if you go to getyourfunk.com, like me, listeners, and you type in whatever you want in the search thing, we reviewed those two movies in episode 92 and episode 192.
Oh, that's funny. It was literally 100 episodes apart.
Yeah. That's
really funny.
I don't know if I knew that. I mean, we reviewed the movies themselves, but I think it was definitely more so from like
the music
perspective and
yeah.
The soundtrack. Yeah.
It was basically a soundtrack review of the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the top three selling cassette tapes were the first and second volumes of Guardians of the Galaxy. It was called, like, The Awesome Mix. And the first volume of this one called The Cosmic Mix, which, honestly, I've never heard of, but I assume is just another mixtape of songs maybe not used in the movie that they plan on using. I don't know. But the funnier thing is, right behind these three Guardians of the Galaxy cassette tapes, the fourth most popular is the soundtrack to Stranger Things, which is another 80s nostalgia-based Netflix series. Yeah. And the first volume of its soundtrack actually sold 3,000 copies in 2017. So combined, these two franchises, Guardians of the Galaxy and Stranger Things, accounted for about half of all cassette tape sales in 2017.
That's insane.
So, here's the thing that I think is really weird about this whole thing, though. It's Kyle's opinion corner. This resurgence of 80s nostalgia is big in Hollywood right now, but to go out and buy an outdated medium like a cassette, and then go and find a cassette player just to play that cassette, just to reignite the nostalgia of these particular franchises seems like a stretch. It seems like a lot of work to do just to be like, oh, this is so nifty, neat, you know?
Right.
So that's the thing that I find curious. I mean, are people buying these just as curios to display and be like, oh, look, I have the cassette from the movie here. Are they buying them to actually play them? It's interesting. It's weird.
It's kind of a neat little thing.
It's a neat little phenomenon going on, yeah.
And I do have one thought about all this, but I'll let you finish your thoughts first.
My thought is just that. I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I actually have the first volume on record. But at the same time, I would never think, hey, I want to get this on an inferior format, like a cassette.
Right.
Oh, look, it tangled. I'm screwed.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is, I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is I don't know if this is just an outlier in the normal sales of cassettes being fairly low, or if this speaks to a larger consumer want to go back and start buying cassette tapes again. I don't know if this is the next evolution of people wanting to buy vinyl, or if this is still kind of in the novelty phase.
So this leads in very smoothly into what I was going to say was, if I were to guess, I would say that the cassette tapes thing is a novelty phase and it's only going to last a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you were saying, oh, it's an inferior format. Like people who have no idea might think, oh, well, vinyl, why are people buying that? That's not digital, but actually vinyl is, I think, technically a higher quality, which we've discussed many times already. Mm-hmm. But cassettes are in many ways an inferior format. So it's going to take a lot to really get cassettes up to the same resurgence that vinyl has. And I don't feel like cassette is going to have the same push of audio enthusiasts that vinyl has had. And I would guess that those people are a big part of why vinyl has come back.
Agreed.
Because they're pushing that quality, whereas with cassette, you don't really have that argument. All you really have is kind of the nostalgic charm. And I kind of feel like it can't stand just on that one leg for more than a couple of years.
It can't sustain itself just on that.
And my second half of that thought is really, because we're saying that like about half of cassette tape sales last year were based on these two franchises. But franchises come and go. Like,
exactly.
10 years from now, we're probably not going to care about Stranger Things.
I kind of already don't. Would you hate me if I said I didn't season 2 that much?
That's fine. Going with that? But yeah, but Guardians of the Galaxy as well. Like, those are great movies, but like, I don't see those. Like, those are kind of passing things. Like, I don't think you can really build a resurgence of a music medium based on just a couple of passing franchises. And the fact that those are making up such a huge part of the sales makes me worry that it's not, though, like those aren't going to necessarily keep them going long term.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. It's the niche quality of the cassette combined with the sort of current state of nostalgia within Hollywood that's not enough to get, you know, to get the industry going again, where people are like, oh, I don't want this on digital. I don't want this on vinyl. I want this on cassette. I mean, not only that, cassettes, by their essence, were meant to be a portable format that you take with you, that you have in your car. Cars don't have cassette players anymore. By that very nature, you're defeating half the purpose of the format.
That's true.
You know, vinyl, as has been proven, is anything but portable. It's meant for a home listening experience, whereas cassettes were designed to kind of be the evolution of 8-tracks in a way,
right?
That you could play in your car.
And the loss of quality was actually, I would hesitate to say that was kind of part of the whole plan of the thing, but I think it was definitely known but ignored because of that portability.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So third up, I guess, in our little news thing we're doing here, is semi-related, actually. Vinyl sales increased again in 2017. We've talked on Funk Radio here a lot about the resurgence of vinyl, about the superior sound quality, blah, blah, blah. I'm a vinyl collector. I like it, whatever. A data tracker, Buzz Angle Music, released data back on January 3rd showing that vinyl sales increased 20% from 2016 and are actually, they're accounting for 10% of all physical sales. That's kind of insane. That means that 1 out of 10 people is buying something on vinyl and not CD.
I guess it doesn't surprise me that much at this point. Not necessarily because I think vinyl is so widespread. It probably is more than I think it is, but I also don't see people buying CDs all the time, so
yeah, no, I think we talked about that before too, I think last year digital sales surpassed physical sales for the first time, which I remember commenting like, I'm surprised this just happened now.
Yeah.
But yeah, CDs I think are kind of going the way of the dinosaur, and I think vinyl is going to end up being the physical medium that kind of replaces them. Because when you have access to digital or streaming music so easily, I mean, shit, I can be like, okay, Google Play, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, oh, shit, my phone just went off. And, yeah, exactly. Unlocked by Kesha. Sure. Playing on Spotify. What's going on? Oh, my God, there's actually a song. There's actually a song called blah, blah, blah. Stop it. Stop it.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, exactly. When you have that easy of access to digital music, it's silly to think that everyone's going to go out and be buying CDs, which at their essence are a digital format themselves.
Yeah.
So, as I was saying, vinyl sales increased 20% from 2016. And in this report by BuzzAngle, they also released the best-selling LPs of the year. The number one best-selling LP was actually Guardians of the Galaxy Awesome Mix Volume 1, which actually was the soundtrack to the first movie that came out in 2014.
And I think the cassette one was also this, to my knowledge.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it
didn't really specify, but I'm pretty sure they meant the first one.
Yeah, exactly. I think the first cassette or for volume one was that best-selling cassette, with volume two being the second, which I guess goes in line, because I know when we reviewed the soundtrack for volume two, we both said like, hey, this is good, but it's not as good as volume one.
Right.
I just find it funny that a 3-year-old soundtrack is the best-selling vinyl in 2017. It sold 64,000 copies.
I'm a little surprised, but at the same time, not really, I guess.
I'm just surprised that despite almost every major artist releasing a vinyl version of their album at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That no major artist that had a big album in 2017 had the vinyl sales be bigger than this album. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a good point. I remember, you know, I don't know exact number, let's just say 5 years ago or even more, the resurgence of vinyl by artists was kind of, for the most part, limited to really hipster indie groups.
Mm-hmm.
Who were like, oh, we're going to print 100 copies of this album on vinyl and see what happens. It wasn't really a mainstream thing, but now even like I think all the major like pop artists and stuff do that too, right?
Oh yeah, Taylor Swift like very explicitly was like, oh yeah, because her album was called like 1989 or some shit.
Mm.
And so she made a point of coming out with an album version because, you know, in 89 albums were still big.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of artists are really kind of jumping on that bandwagon now. A lot of rappers are. Now, this might actually tie a little bit back into the first topic we were talking about. I don't know if the part of the reason for this is because, you know, yeah, they're able to charge more for an LP. Maybe artists are releasing them on there because they get a greater cut, so to speak, than they would from, like, say, a streaming service. So they're kind of supplementing that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of the reason too. I don't know, but I'm happy either way. According to the Nielsen's report, vinyl sales actually reached an all-time high in 2017. I don't know if that's saying that the BuzzAngle report means that 2017 wasn't an all-time high.
Well, and to clarify, the Nielsen report that's only since 1991. So it's not an all-time high volume of vinyl ever. It's just since 1991.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
When Nielsen started keeping track. In 91, I mean, I don't know exactly when vinyl quote-unquote died, but
I'm pretty sure by 91 it wasn't doing too hot.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's actually a really good spot to start.
Yeah, true.
Because then you can really see how it spikes from basically nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't have the data of the 70s and 80s kind of skewing that.
Right.
Nielsen actually said that this Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack was the third best-selling album of the year, not the first, which I think is part of the difference between them and BuzzAngle. They said that actually two Beatles albums, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and Abbey Road, actually topped Guardians of the Galaxy, which I also find kind of funny because both of those, I'm sure they obviously have reissues, vinyl reissues of those albums, but neither of those are new artists whatsoever. Other top sellers for vinyl was Ed Sheeran's Divide, which he is a new artist, Amy Winehouse's Back to Black, and Prince's Purple Rain. Prince probably because he died.
I'm not super surprised by that.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by Ed Sheeran, only because he is obviously a current artist, but he's obviously a current artist that a lot of people who like vinyl appreciate. So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, no, that's kind of, I guess, been our little news recap. This has been your funky host, Kyle.
And this has been your funky host, Peter. But before we go, we're going to say where you can find us on the internet.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/getyourfunk. You can like us there and see pretty much immediately whenever there's new episodes. We also have our own website, as we mentioned earlier, getyourfunk.com. Search for any episode in our entire history of the show. You can listen, you can download, all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Bye for now. You'll hear us again soon. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.